Hi, everyone. This is John. Tonight, Gary is in North Carolina doing a calling retreat with Michael Thompson, and Sam is actually doing a speaking engagement with something local in Ann Arbor. So I've asked Mark Wager to join me. We've talked a little bit about the movie that covers the life of George Bailey, It's a Wonderful Life, and I know probably everyone listening to this has seen it at least 10 to 20 times. I probably have seen it close to 50 myself, so I think we're all really familiar with it. And I've always liked this movie because it follows the same kind of a theme as Mr. Holland's Opus, which is one of the movies we use in the calling retreat. We talk a lot about how Glenn Holland in that movie was chasing a dream, and he never got to see the dream fulfilled, but in the process of chasing that dream, you know, life just kind of got in the way, but the life that got in the way ended up being the very thing he was made for. And I think a lot of times that's true. Our dreams come from something deep within us, and that can be the impetus that drives us through all these dark and difficult times that we have to go through. And we do go through those times as we fulfill our calling. But it's not really the dream itself as much as it is that inner, that deeper desire, that deeper compelling compulsion we have that was planted by God. And that's what really causes us to take action, to continue to pursue, to continue to bring the weightiness of our lives into the world. And I think the dream often is just a surface-level manifestation of that deeper desire. So anyway, I wanted to look at the life of George Bailey because I think he's such a good picture of this in many ways, and probably all of us can identify with him a lot. The movie starts out, and George is saying, he expresses his dream. I want to build things. I want to plan modern cities. I want to do something big and important. But life never turned out that way for him. And yet he was always doing something important. When his brother Harry fell through the ice, he was the first one to go rescue him. And then when Mr. Gower put the poison in the pills accidentally, it was George who actually took the initiative to go figure out, how am I going to deal with this? How are we going to save these kids' lives and turn that situation into a positive one? And even when his brother Harry came back from college, he was married, he had a job offer, and George knew he just had to let him go back. He was supposed to come back to Bedford Falls and let George go to college, but George knew that he just couldn't let him do that. It was too good of an opportunity for Harry. So he forewent his own college experience on behalf of his brother. And that was just the pattern of his life. He was always looking at the needs of others as more important than his own. And there was just this compelling desire in him to do, I guess do the right thing. That's who George Bailey was. He couldn't not be that way. It was just a compelling in him. Now, Mark, you and I talked about this the other day, and you had a little bit of a different take on that. Why don't you share that?
Well, yeah, the question I was going to ask you first off was, you were talking about all these different things that George did, and they just sort of came out of who he was, and you're calling it a compelling, and I'm just wondering, What is it that you see? Frame that up a little bit more when you say compelling. Because my take was a little different as we first talked about it, but I want to really understand what that compelling is that you see in him.
Yeah, I like to use that word compelling because often we talk about desires and we speak at the level of more of our surface desires. And a compelling is something that is so, it's a desire that is so deeply planted. It is something, in fact, sometimes you don't even recognize it as a desire. It's just something you do, you can't help but do it. And I always go back to the Apostle Paul. He was compelled to preach the gospel. He was miserable if he didn't. And so when I look at George Bailey, I see him encounter situations where there are people who have a need or have a situation, and he simply could not look at himself first. He could not act in a selfish manner. He always had to act in a way that was for their benefit, regardless of what the cost was for him.
Okay.
Did that help? Did that make?
Yeah, it does. It helps a little bit. I think I wrestle with this movie in the sense that the beginning, as his life unfolds, I get wrapped up in the, probably because I see this in my own life at times, I get wrapped up in the I don't know what to call it, not the drama, but like he seems to do everything from duty. It's not like when I think of like a compelling desire, at least my more romantic pictures of that, is that it's something that I long to do. And it's something that's obvious that I want to do. And so, like, when I see George's life, I don't see that. At least not at first. I don't see that like, boy, he really wants this, because the whole first part of the movie is all about him really wanting to not do this. All the opportunities that are coming his way, he seems to be doing everything he can do to, like, not do it. He just wants out. And then when it, you know, push comes to shove and somebody has to do it, the responsible George steps in and saves the day. So I don't want to discount the idea of compelling, but I know that I'm probably not alone in that the first thing that I see when I look at his life is not that deep compelling, but it's more of just the sense of duty. Like, I'm the responsible one. I'll do what's right. And, you know, let's just go from there.
And there wasn't a whole lot of joy necessarily in doing that.
Yeah, and that's the, like, when we first talked about this the other day, and we didn't talk long about it, but it's that idea of, I think most of us see our calling, when we think of our calling and our passion, as something that's identifiable and deep, and that, like, when we get to do it, it brings this joy and this life because it's effortless and good. And I think in George's life, we don't see it that way. He may have had a compelling, but it didn't appear to be the kind of compelling that, like, we would have, you know, like, or at least that I'm describing in terms of it being this, wow, this is so great. I love doing this. And look what great things come out of me offering my life in this way. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's so funny because I had never considered that aspect of it. And I think you're right to a large degree that there really was a lot of duty in him that was coming out. You know, he was just simply doing the right thing. And I think that's, I'm looking back at my own life after you and I talked about this, and I thought, you know, I think there's a lot of times when I do fulfill my calling some out of duty. I'm exhausted. I'm in a circumstance that I don't necessarily like, and yet there's an opportunity for me to bring the weightiness of my life into it. And sometimes I'm just not real excited about doing that.
Right.
For whatever reason. And so I do think there will be times when we live out of duty, and there will be times when we live out of true desire, and maybe most of the time there's a little bit of a combination of both.
Yeah. And I mean, we obviously don't know tons about George's life because he's a character on a movie, but as I try to overlay his life, like, on what you're saying, I don't know if everything was completely joyless and, you know, like this life-sucking, awful thing. I mean, you see scenes where he, what was his name? Martinelli, is that his name?
Martini?
The barkeeper. Yeah, Martini, yeah. And
yeah.
he, uh, they get a house, and he gives them a bread and wine, and it's this joyful, amazing experience that he gets to be part of trying to launch somebody, build a house, and get them involved in their life. And so I think there's lots of glimpses of that that you see along the way in George's life. So I don't want to make it like paint too dark a picture of the duty part of it. But I think there's a question there though. Like, how do you tell the difference? Like, maybe even how did George at some point was he able to tell the difference between this is just duty and the other part of it, the part where he's getting to bring something that he's good at or that comes from a deeper place within him?
I'm not sure he was fully aware of it, just from looking at the movie itself. Now, if this was a real character or a real person, we might have more of a clue. But it's like you say, we are talking about just a fictional character. I go back to the scene where he was on his way to the honeymoon with a lot of cash, and then they had to go bail out the bank.
Right.
And, you know, even then, he's dealing with these people, and they're trying to get all their money out. They're trying to shut him down. Everything's going against him. But he's still – it's not a pleasant situation, but he's still passionate. The way he talks to them, he's just passionate about keeping that building and loan alive, even though he hates the place, because he sees the value of it. And at the end, when they end up with $2 left over, they go dancing into the vault, and they're all excited, and they just feel a sense of victory. So I think there was some joy there in the midst of, you know, all of a sudden he realizes, oh, my, I'm supposed to be on a honeymoon right now.
Right.
But.
Yeah, there's something you just said brought another question to mind. They were supposed to go on a honeymoon. They gave all their money away, and he saved the building and loan, even though he hated it. He said, and I thought, how many things in our own life, like, do we look at, or even our present circumstances, do we look at, and we just hate the circumstances that we're in? We just hate it. Like, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
We don't see anything good. It doesn't appear to be leading us in the direction of our calling. And it might even seem like a smaller role than we think our calling or our life, you know, the weightiness of our life deserves. So I'm wondering, is there a way, without having like an angel come, you know, and show you your life as it would be, is there a way to find that in the midst of this, what you would think is difficult? Like, I hate this job that I have, my boss is horrible, or whatever it is. How do we find life in that? How do we find our calling in the middle of those things?
You know, that is a really good question, and I'm sure every one of us has struggled with that, continues to struggle with it. For me, and again, this is I think one of the reasons I like this movie is because I can so identify with him. You know, I'm in a job that it's a good job, but if I had $5 million dropped in my lap, tomorrow would be my last day at work, and I wouldn't really miss a whole lot other than the people. So I'm not in a situation that I'm just absolutely thrilled about. And yet I do get to bring my calling into that, and there's a great deal of joy when that happens. Now, that doesn't happen all the time, but when it does, it's really fantastic. But for me, a lot of times it's just a matter of walking with God daily, keeping in really close intimacy with Him, communicating with Him, expressing my frustrations. You know, I was at a client about a week or two ago, and I came away from the meeting back to my office. The whole time I was coming back, I just thought, my clients, it was a group of people, they were so thrilled and so excited about what was going on with their business, and I just could care less. And I mean, I came back to my office just kind of depressed and thinking, I'm just tired of this. I'm so tired of this. And yet, and I would express that to the Lord, and just I would pray through it. And, you know, here I know you've had me here. I know there's value. I'm going to keep on pursuing. But I just got to tell you, I'm just emotionless over this thing. I feel dry coming home from this office appointment. And it was just like over the next few days, God kept bringing up little hints and reminders. Yep, that's part of it, John. It's not a bed of roses, but you're in a place where your weightiness and your glory are needed, and you're having an impact. So stay there, and just trust me with this. And so I do.
Yeah.
And the next thing and just within a day or two, all of a sudden there's an opportunity that pops up its head, and you know, I get to do something with minister to somebody or say an encouraging word or whatever, and it's just there's joy again. So I think it's
So basically, what I'm hearing from you is there's this intersection between like our life and, like in George's case, just keep it in line with the movie, the supernatural, right? I mean, like God intersects our life, and if we live with that understanding, that mindset, then pretty much anything that we do can begin to feel larger than just the things that we're a part of, just the moments that we live, right? So you're saying, like, in your life, things that are hard or all these things are going on and it's tough, and yet when you allow the intersection of God to intersect that thought in your life, then it takes on a whole different, I don't know, like a perspective, different perspective. I mean, the whole movie, right, is in the end, ultimately, George's perspective is the only thing that's really changed.
That's
exactly
right.
The circumstances didn't change. He thought all these different things, and the only thing at the end that really changed is his perspective, and that's it. And then,
right,
because of that different perspective, all these other things started to come into play. The people that were around him that he just had taken for granted and didn't think about the value of them in his life end up rescuing him at the end, right? So it's like that perspective that we have, I think, shapes not just our attitude, but, I mean, I think it shapes, like, our whole way that we approach life. I mean, you know that the next day when George Bailey gets up, life will look different for him. That building alone that he hated so much, he'll now look back at it, and just like you were saying, he'll look back at it where God intersected his life and think, this building alone isn't awful. It's been my training ground for all these years. It's been the place where I've been able to really come alive. I just didn't know it. I mean, it's sort of sad in that regard, like how long he lived without realizing what he had.
And I think that same thing happens for us. You know, I know I have spent many, many years just moping in my vocation until I began to see it was really this whole calling ministry that's helped me understand why I am where I am and the great value that there is there. You know, Brad Weber has a good comment. He says, I think what we all need to do from time to time is to try to take a step back from our life and ask God and others for their view on how we are impacting those around us. And it's kind of like you said, the line from the movie is, George, you've been given a great gift. You've been given the chance to see what the world would be like without you. And that's the perspective that we've got to find, is just seeing that there truly is eternal impact in what we're doing, even some of the mundane things we're doing.
Right. Yeah, that's a hard one because I think Brad's right that these are things that we have to keep coming back to, but it's so hard, just from in my own life at least, it's so hard that when you're just doing the little things along the way, nothing that feels significant, like just like George, you know, he was just doing the daily practical things. It didn't feel significant. It's really hard to remember the perspective or whatever you want to call it of thinking that your life carries weight. I mean, at some level, there just has to be faith that doing these things matters, that saying yes to the things that align with who you are and your calling, that those things matter. Just walking along, trying to live out moment by moment the things that don't seem big and don't seem exciting, but just are. And it's
right.
Instead, like I said, for me, I'm always looking for like something bigger. Did people read this? Did that have an impact? I'm always looking for the payoff or the somebody to say like, yep, that mattered. And
exactly.
And that's not a good way to live, don't you think?
Oh yes. I got to tell the story. When we were in Colorado back last month, I heard this guy, and I can't even remember who told me the story, and I'm probably going to botch some details, but he was sharing about a guy he knew who was an alcoholic, and he was somewhere.
Hey, John, your phone's breaking up a little bit, bud. We can't hear you.
Oh. Is this better?
It sounds better when you just said, oh, but, yeah, just that
okay.
Whole, like, restart your story.
Okay, thank you. So this guy, he had a friend who was an alcoholic, and this guy was, I think he was in a hotel or someplace, but he happened to look over and he saw a father and his little daughter walking up the stairs, and she looked at him with just, you know, googly eyes, and he had his arm around her neck, and this guy said to himself, I need to be a father, and I'm not. He was a dad, but he just wasn't being a good father. And it was just seeing that one scene made him decide, I'm going to get this alcoholism out of my life. And he went on to get released from that. He went on further to develop a ministry to alcoholics, and he has developed a ministry to alcoholics in other countries. And
wow.
I thought, well, that's a fantastic story, but that man walking up the stairs with his daughter has no idea the impact he had simply being who he was as a loving father.
Right.
He was simply walking
right.
up the stairs and looking down with affection on his daughter, and he has no idea there are people all over the world who have been freed from alcoholism as a result of that one little thing.
Yeah, wow. That's good.
It's a picture of
Bob. Yeah, Bob had made a comment here. Said the turning point was a crying out, I want to live. And I think that's describes what you just said. I mean, there comes a point where, like, he saw something in that other guy's life and then cried out, like, I want to live. I don't want this anymore.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, that really is.
I think that's probably another thing, as I think about the movie, that George didn't make it alone. I mean, now in the movie he said an angel comes, and so he has, you know, the angel there. But even outside of the angel, threaded through the whole thing, you see George with his friends, George with people, and then, of course, the pinnacle moment at the end where he's going to be carted off to jail if he doesn't raise this money, and all these people come, and, you know, it's sort of the Mr. Holland's Opus moment that they all come and they're showing their support for him, and I just think there's something there that we can't do this alone. I mean, the idea, Brad saying that we need to ask God and we need to ask others. So let's ask that real quick. What's that look like? Like asking God, asking others, like what are we asking him for? What does that look like?
You mean, phrase that again.
Well, I'm saying that, like, George needed other people, and he wasn't going to be able to make it on his own. I don't think he would have ever realized that his calling was being lived out if it wasn't for other people in his life. And, you know, like Brad had made the comment that we all from time to time need to take a step back and ask God and ask others about how they view our impact and to try to give us some kind of feedback or something, I think is what Brad is saying. Not validation per se, but affirmation maybe that we're going the right direction.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, like, how do we do that? Because honestly, in my life, I've wrestled with this very thing. Like, you don't want to be needy so that you're having to, like, have people be the thing that's always telling you you're going the right way. But I don't want to get to the point where I'm jumping off a bridge either. Like George Bailey. You know, because life is hard, right? And I don't want to end up jumping off a bridge. George didn't go to people. He didn't go to people, and he was going to end his life. He found the end of his life when he took people out of the equation. But it was when people came back into the equation, when he saw that with everybody ripped out of his life, it left a huge hole. So I'm just trying to get to that point. Like, how do we do that? Like, do you have any practical ideas about how do we go about really getting that kind of feedback short of an angel coming down and turning our life around?
You know, I really think it goes back to the level of friendship that you have with people. If you're not really deeply involved with just a handful of people on a pretty regular basis, they're not going to have much of a context to give you any feedback. And I think a lot of it depends on just how deep your friendships go. And then when they are that deep, you really have the freedom to say, you know, I really would like to know what do you see in me? What is the impact that you feel from me when you're around me? That's a bold question. It's also a scary question because they may not have much to say. Although
yeah,
it's
a super scary question. I mean, I don't know. Like,
I've ever asked that question.
Yeah, I was just gonna. I didn't want to put you on the spot. But yeah, like right. I mean, have you? Maybe there's been, you know, like a one or two times in your life kind of the time that you might ask that sort of a question.
Other than in a formal group where that's the assignment, I don't know that I've ever, I can't remember ever asking anybody that question. What I do remember is a handful of times when people have just voluntarily said, John, this is what I see in you. And there have been times when I have just voluntarily told others, this is the impact you have on me when you're around me.
Yeah, that's good. Most of my experiences with that usually come at a time when somebody's cussing me out for something I did. So that kind of feedback's not always not always as wanted, but yeah, I mean, so I guess that's just a good reminder, and I think we have to be reminded this over and over and over again that not only did George Bailey did his life matter because he helped bail out the building and loan, but you could see it in Martini's situation, that one scene. You could see it in the things where the I forget her name now, the blonde girl that was going to go off to New York, and he gave her a couple of dollars. I mean, it's the little things like that. It's the little connections that, you know, were obvious in George's life. So that's what I'm thinking. It's like, for me, it's not just that George, like, overtly helped other people, but in our lives, it's just sometimes it's just telling them. It's just telling somebody, hey, I love when you did that, or I love the way you did this. I have to wonder if George heard that along the way. I'm sure that people said it, because even Billy, Uncle Billy,
Uncle Billy.
When he was talking about you know, like one of the Bailey boys getting the Congressional, you know, Medal of Honor. And he said, George would have gotten two if he was there. So I know George was hearing positive feedback. But you have to wonder, was George hearing it? Because that's the flip side of it. I think the reminder that we have to have every with ourselves is we need to be telling other people this stuff. But then, like, for me, I hear these things sometimes, and I just think, yeah, that's nice, yeah. But I don't own it. It's easier to own the bad stuff than the good stuff. Do you find that true in your life? Or is it just
me? Yeah. And of course, as you're saying this, I'm thinking of the verse where it talks about, but encourage one another and all the more as you see the day drawing near. It's just, you know, it's so important that we get the kind of feedback, and it has to be genuine. You know, it can't just be platitudes. It really has to be something genuine, but that we hear from others that they experience the glory of our life.
Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking, I read a little article about this because I knew we were going to be talking about this. And the It's a Wonderful Life, the movie, it did really poorly when it was first released.
Yeah.
And one of the like newspaper reporters that was covering the movie said something to the effect of that it was really not a great movie because it was too sentimental. It was way too sentimental. In other words, there's too much emotion. There's too much sort of Pollyanna, like, oh, you should just, these things, good things happen to good people, that kind of a thing. And yet they were talking about in this article, like, what's the reason this movie has the longevity that it has? And I think it's that. It's the fact that it does have those elements. It does have the things where it's unapologetically optimistic and trying to send a message that we need each other, that if we will walk through even the difficult things, that good things will happen. And so it's I think there's a message there that, like, we need this with each other, but somehow, especially among men, but I think men and women, because I don't see the women that are around me doing it much more than the men, is to give those pieces of encouragement, to be sentimental, to be a little, you know, not sappy, corny, but like genuinely sentimental in saying, here's the sentiments I have to you. Here's the things I need. Because that, I think, in the long run, and this movie proves this out, that it's we need this at that level.
Well, you know, as George Bailey was going through life and doing the things that he did, one of the things by his actions, and sometimes by his words, but mostly by his actions, he was communicating to these people, they had value. They weren't simply just cast off from society. And, you know, as opposed to Mr. Potter, he didn't care about their kids. He didn't care if they lived in a slum.
Right.
All he cared about was getting more money and getting more power. But, you know, George just saw the value of people, and he gave each person a sense that they truly mattered. I love the line when he's coming out of the office. He's just helped Violet Biggs. And she says, I'm glad I know you, George. And I just thought, that's such a good statement. You know, I'm glad I know you. You have impacted me, and you have a lot of value that you offer.
Yeah. Boy, what if we just started that one line? You know, if we just started using that one line, like, I'm glad I know you.
Yeah.
I mean, that alone can be super encouraging.
Oh, that's that really would mean the world, to say that to somebody.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting experiment to just over the next 30 days, you know, to just start telling that to people and see if you see a difference in not just their lives, but in your own life. I mean, Jesus said, right, it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. So it'd be interesting to try that. Let me try that.
That's our Christmas gift to each other.
There you go. Jim McFarland said here. He says, it strikes me that if you're not giving, you are not living. and all that giving is like snowflakes that eventually pile up like an avalanche that God releases an unexpected avalanche of blessing. I think there's something there. That thought of, Jesus said that himself, right? Store up for yourself treasures somewhere else, right, in heaven, somewhere not where you get to see what happens to it. And like you were saying, the guy that's walking up the steps with his daughter, you know, living a good life matters. To be about giving if I have a friend that says, know what else to do, when you just feel like, I don't even know what to do, I don't know how to offer, I don't know what to do, she says, just do what's right. Like when you don't know what to do, just do what's right. Just walk in the things that you know are right. And that alone helps add clarity to your life. It helps you take those next steps forward, I think. Mm-hmm. I think Jim is right. Yeah. Those kind of things pile up, and God's economy is definitely that that they will pay off in the long run.
Yeah. Well, we are getting real close to the end of our time, and this has really been a lot of fun. I'm glad you joined me in this. I'm glad I know you, Mark.
Yeah, I'm glad you invited me. Great.
I said, I'm glad I know you.
I'm glad I know you, too. That's awesome.
Do you have any closing thoughts as we end our time?
No, I can't think of anything else that I had. I mean, there's all kinds of things I think that you could still probably draw from the movie. But I think the message that I've heard us coming back to, and this wasn't scripted or anything, so it's just things that have come up, I think, is that people matter, that how we interact with each other matters, and it can have a huge impact on others. And so even if we don't think of like those things as being like our calling, I think all of us are called to encourage and to help each other move forward. So what that looks like and how that might be manifested is going to look different for everybody and how they live out their calling, you know, what their unique gifting and glory is. But I think these kind of calls, just thinking about these things, and I want to try to nurture some relationships in my own life where I can ask that question, you know, that was posed about, pausing and taking a risk and asking somebody, what the effect of my life is on them.
Yeah. I think that's good. I think that will be so encouraging to hear that from somebody else, from an outside person, you know, as they're taking a look. I mean, that's really a lot of what we do in the calling retreat when we're doing the feedback session. You know, we've taken a look at a man's life, and then we're speaking back, you know, this is what I see, and this is the impact you've had on me even this weekend. Very often in that final small group setting, you'll hear people say, this is how you have impacted me this very weekend. And that's just a very real affirmation of who they are and what they bring. And that's powerful.
Yeah, what about you? Do you have any final thoughts?
You know, I just think it's just so much fun to find that thing in you that is your weightiness, your glory that you bring, and just to not just be knowledgeable of it, but go ahead and bring it everywhere you can. Even when you're in situations that don't seem to give you a lot of encouragement or joy,
right,
you just don't know what God is doing behind the scenes. And I've had some situations where I was doing what I love to do most, so speaking into somebody's life, giving them encouragement, giving them some direction, giving them some hope, and I would hang up and not really think much about it at all and find out 2 months later it was a major turning point in their life. And, you know, it caught me by complete surprise. So And I think that's the experience for every one of us. So we've had that kind of impact on somebody else's life, and we just simply won't know it until we get to heaven.
Yep, yep. I hope that more times than not that we do get to hear and see glimpses of it. And I really think that, you know, we always talk theoretically, like we may not see that thing. You know, we may not have our Mr. Holland's Opus or our George Bailey at the end of the movie moment, you know, until the end of our life or beyond. But I think most of us, if we begin to look and change our perspective, to look for the way God's intersecting, you know, the supernatural with the physical, with, you know, imposing his kingdom, letting his kingdom come here on earth, the more that we begin to see those things happen and the more attentive we are to our place in that, you know, how we bring our glory, our offering to those around us, I think we'll see those opportunities. I think we'll see them more. I don't think it's something that, you know, my hope is that there's lots of Mr. Holland's Opus moments and lots of George Bailey moments like that throughout our lives.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not just something that happens once at the end and then, you know, George Bailey never heard another kind word again. That my thought is that there was probably a lot more. Maybe not, they don't look all the same, but my guess is that he, because of his perspective change, he probably saw a lot more of those kind of moments, even in the one-on-one relationships with those around him through the rest of his life.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Well, okay. I guess it's time to call it a campfire conversation.
All right.
I'm really glad you helped me, Mark. Thank you so much. And everyone,
hey, thanks
thank
for letting
you
me
for
do it, John.
Joining us tonight. Yeah. We'll do this again.
All right.
So, good night, everybody.
All right. Yeah, good night, everybody.